This is Molly Hemingway of The Federalist. Join me, my husband Mark of Real Clear Investigations, 12-time All-American swimmer Riley Gaines, Aaron Wren of The American Conservative, and others for the 2024 Making the Case Conference, Friday, July 12th and Saturday, July 13th at Concordia University, Chicago. Learn more at issuesetc.org. Making the Case, July 12th and 13th in Chicago. issuesetc.org.
Has the Food and Drug Administration ever given a drug, especially one with so many known risks, has it ever been given a green light like the abortion drugs have been given? The FDA has slowly been removing safety restrictions from the abortion drugs, and all the while it appears fully aware of the fact that there are considerable risks, especially when administered outside the observation of a physician. Welcome back to Issues Etc. I'm Todd Wilkin. Joining us to talk about a Supreme Court case on chemical abortion drugs and the FDA, U.S. Food and Drug Administration v. Alliance for Hippocratic Medicine, Dr. Donna Harrison, board-certified obstetrician and gynecologist, director of research for the American Association of Pro-Life Obstetricians and Gynecologists, and associate scholar for the Charlotte Lozier Institute. Dr. Harrison, welcome.
Thanks so much, Todd, for having me on.
And Gabriella McIntyre, she is legal counsel for Alliance Defending Freedom. ADF is representing four national medical associations, their members, and four individual doctors against the FDA. Gabriella, welcome.
Thank you so much for having me.
Dr. Harrison, what are the issues in your suit against the Food and Drug Administration?
Well, Todd, let me tell you first what are not the issues. This suit is not to take the abortion drug off the market. This suit is to reinstitute common sense safeguards so that a dangerous drug can be a little less dangerous, because we know that Mifeprex, the drug, the chemical abortion drug, it causes complications in women. One out of 25 women are going to end up in the ER, and the FDA is full well aware of this. And when you take away the safeguards, like having a physician supervise and having a physician see a woman ahead of time, that number is going to skyrocket, and already has increased over the past few years.
Why are the original safety standards necessary, Dr. Harrison?
Well, the abortion drug doesn't work all the time. And the further you are in pregnancy, the more often, the more likely you are to have the drug fail and to have massive hemorrhaging and tissue left inside. So, for example, if a woman is only 7 weeks pregnant, that's 3 weeks after she misses her period, you've got about a 1 out of 25 chance of ending up in the ER. But if she is a month or more later in her pregnancy, she's got a 1 out of 3 chance of ending up in the ER. That's terrible, and women are not being told this. And if a woman has a pregnancy that's outside of her uterus, that's called an ectopic pregnancy, then the abortion drugs do not end that ectopic pregnancy. So the ectopic pregnancy continues to grow, and she'll have pain and bleeding. And that's a sign that the ectopic pregnancy is starting to rupture. There have been women who have had rupturing ectopic pregnancies. They called their abortion provider and said, "We have pain and bleeding." And the abortion provider says, "Well, that's a normal part of the chemical abortion. So just lay down." And they died because their tube ruptured and they hemorrhaged to death internally. This is the kind of thing that can be easily found if she had an in-person visit with a physician and if the physician did an ultrasound. So it's not only that. I mean, it gets worse. The way the FDA is allowing the abortion drug to be given out right now is by the mail without any examination at all. So if you don't have an ultrasound early in pregnancy, half of the time you're off on your due date, how far along you are in pregnancy. And that means you are at increased risk of complications. So there is no way in creation that anyone can get adequate informed consent to know what their risks are of hemorrhage and tissue left inside and need for surgery unless they have an early ultrasound. And that requires an in-person visit. So with just dispensing over the internet or calling in a prescription to a pharmacy, you don't have the ability to give a woman informed consent. And what's even worse, you have no ability to screen that woman for coercion. There have been multiple cases over the last decade where boyfriends have obtained this abortion drug and given it to their girlfriend without her knowledge or consent. That's, by the way, illegal in 50 states, all across the country. And yet you get coerced abortion, and sex traffickers and abusers use the access to this drug to manage the women that they are trafficking. And that's horrible. And you cannot screen a woman adequately for sex trafficking and abuse if all you're doing is looking at her face over the internet or hearing her voice over the phone. You have no idea who's around her. And what's even worse, if a woman has a blood type that's O negative or B negative or A negative, she needs a medicine called Rogam. Rogam is a medicine that she should get every time she has a birth, a miscarriage, or an abortion to prevent her from developing an immune reaction to a subsequent pregnancy later. If she doesn't get Rogam, she can develop an immune response to a next baby and will have an increased risk that that baby will die, and she may not be able to have children after that. That's a huge issue. And you cannot give a woman Rogam if you don't see her in person. So the elimination of the in-person visit, what the FDA did, was completely without scientific basis and really illegal by their own rules. And it hurts women. That's why we're in this battle, because my doctors take care of the women who end up in the emergency room with hemorrhage and tissue left inside. And they take care of the women who come in subsequent pregnancies and can't have a baby because they didn't get Rogam. And these are real consequences to real women, and women's health matters.
Gabriella, the oral arguments in this case were yesterday. What were your impressions of the justice's questions during arguments?
Yeah, well, you know, I think the most shocking line of questioning was certainly, I believe it was Justice Alito. He had asked the government, who is representing the FDA, if our doctors in this case do not have standing, and just by the way, standing is the legal principle by which in order to bring a suit, you have to have a concrete harm that is traceable to, in this case, the FDA, that's also redressable by the courts. And so that's another issue in this case that we were litigating and have been litigating. And Justice Alito asked the government, you know, if our doctors don't have standing to challenge this agency action, then who would? And the government basically came back and said, well, it's hard to imagine anyone who would have the ability to challenge this sort of agency action. And so that's a shocking revelation, because that would basically mean that, if true, the agency decisions are unreviewable, and that should alarm everyone concerned about the safety of both our nation's drugs and also how these agencies are operating. But just in terms of how the justices were operating yesterday, you know, they came out with a lot of hard questions, a lot of great questions, I think, from both sides. And you could tell that they were concerned about the doctors and standing, but also about the merits. They didn't ask the government as many questions about the merits, but I do think that that was an important part of this case. And certainly Aaron Hawley, who argued on behalf of our doctors and the associations in this case, made a great case for why the FDA acted unlawfully in this case.
Do we know why the FDA has slowly but surely removed the safety standards on the abortion drugs, Gabriella?
Well, it's hard to say for certain, but in order to modify a risk evaluation and mitigation strategy, which is what, or REMS, which is what these drugs are under because they are so high risk, the drug sponsor, which in this case is Danko Pharmaceuticals, they have to come in and they have to prompt the FDA to do so, but they have to rely on adequate data and studies to do so. And yesterday in oral argument, you heard a line of questioning, I believe also from Justice Alito, where he asked, you know, what is the harm to Danko, to the drug sponsor in this case? You know, what are you motivated by? And they essentially conceded, well, we're motivated by profit. We want to make money off this drug, and less standards means that we can give these drugs without discretion to a lot more women and make more money. And so certainly that seems to be one of the motivations behind making these drugs more available with less safeguards.
Do we know, Gabriella, of any other instances where the FDA has basically taken off all the guardrails on a drug that has demonstrable risks like this?
not in the way that they have done it here. What FDA has done here is it has stripped back these safeguards that it, by the way, just a few years ago mentioned were absolutely critical and also minimally burdensome to the industry. And it stripped them away, relying on, as a backstop, ER doctors and hospitalists and OBGYN hospitalists like our doctors to provide the backstop for complications that it anticipates will arise. I know Dr. Harrison did mention this, but the label itself on the mifepristone label states that roughly 1 in 25 women will go to the ER with complications from taking these high-risk drugs. And that is the label that's been in existence since 2016. The FDA itself has cited studies in 2021 that indicates that removing that initial in-person office visit that it removed in 2021 increases that number significantly.
And Gabrielle, does the FDA, you mentioned the illegality of this according to their own regulations, do they have the authority to remove standards like this?
Only if they follow the proper and lawful protocol under both their governing statute, the FDCA, as well as the Administrative Procedure Act, and they did not do so here. And you need look no further than the FDA's own words to get to that conclusion. The FDA did an about-face on its opinion that these safeguards were vital, and it based that off of data and studies that the agency itself acknowledged were insufficient and inadequate to come to those conclusions. And they also removed numerous interrelated safeguards without any studies examining how those changes as a whole would affect women's health and safety. And they didn't even explain why that would be unnecessary. The administrative agencies like the FDA are held to a higher standard than that. And in this case, FDA's actions were certainly unlawful and quite frankly reckless.
Dr. Harrison, you talked earlier about the risks of these drugs. And I'm curious, does the research itself back up at least the reported instances? And it's really harrowing to see how many adverse effects and how many hospitalizations, how many transfusions have been required over the years through these drugs.
Yes, the research that we have does back up that the rate of complications from chemical abortion have increased as the number of abortions are done by chemical abortions. Also, there's data from the UK showing that the way the drug has been given without medical supervision increases the risk to women of these complications. That is massive hemorrhage and tissue left inside. And the reason is because the further along in pregnancy she is, the higher the risk. And there have even been women who have taken these drugs, obtained them online, taken them and delivered babies who were viable, who were 24 weeks, who were 32 weeks, completely unprepared for the fact that they're going to see a baby who could have lived if the baby had had care and dies in front of them. And the other horrific thing that women are not being prepared for is the fact that when they take these drugs with no supervision, they may be completely alone when they go through labor, when they pass their baby, who is a recognizable baby. And what do women do? It's just horrific that these women are abandoned and kicked to the curb without any kind of care when they're in their most hour of need in the process of passing the baby and the placenta.
So it sounds, Gabriella, like the FDA is fully aware of the dangers connected with these drugs.
Absolutely, yes. And I know we've mentioned this several times, but it bears repeating that the FDA's own label on mifepristone says that roughly 1 in 25 women who use these drugs are going to go to the emergency room. And it's relying on the doctors in the emergency rooms to be that final backstop for when these complications arise.
When you say doctors in the emergency room being a backstop, what does that mean in real time? What situation are you describing there?
Sure. So I'm describing a situation, and Dr. Harrison can absolutely weigh in here as well, but our doctors and the doctors in our member associations, they are OBGYNs and OBGYN hospitalists who are working on the labor and delivery floor. They are structuring their practices and entered into their practices because they wanted to bring life into the world. And when a complication that arises in this emergency situation takes them away from that, they are then taken to the emergency room, scrubbing in to perform surgery or to help deal with these complications. And then they find out it's from an elective abortion. And that harms their consciences. They're placed in an untenable situation where they're forced to choose between, do I help save this woman or do I violate my conscience? And of course, they are not going to stop saving the woman. So they're put to an untenable choice. And the FDA knew that that would happen and actually conscripted the doctors to be part of that process. It stated in its own documents that it relied on the fact that emergency room doctors and OBGYN hospitalists would be there to help with the fallout of this complications when it removed the safeguards for mifepristone.
Of course, that assumes that a woman goes to the emergency room, that assumes that a woman has quick access to an emergency room, and that the emergency room rightly evaluates her situation. I imagine there might be a case where a woman takes this drug and then is not altogether willing to admit to having taken it when she gets to the ER. What are your thoughts there, Dr. Harrison?
Well, that's a really dangerous situation. And we know from looking at women where that have happened, where they've had a chemical abortion and then gone to the ER and said that they had a spontaneous abortion, they are more likely to get admitted. They're more likely to have multiple ER visits and procedures. And that's just, it's poor care for women. But what's even worse, and something that I wanted to follow up on what Gabby said, is that during the oral arguments, the government was making very light of the fact that we care for both patients. Our organizations, the Alliance for Hippocratic Medicine, of which I'm the chair, we have 30,000 docs. We staff the ERs, and many of our docs staff the ERs in rural areas like what you're talking about, where women have very little care. And the justices were making a little bit light of the fact that you have a woman who's bleeding, you're going to take care of the emergency. And some of those women are going to come in with babies who are still alive, and you're going to have to be the hands that separate that baby out and be the final cause of that baby's death. And that is a moral injury. That is something that hurts us as physicians, because we went into medicine to save life, not to kill patients. And that baby in the womb is the second patient. And so it is hard. It's awful to be the one who has to end the life of that patient because of a life-threatening situation. We do it. We will do it. We'll save the woman's life. But it's completely unnecessary. It's not like when a woman develops a disease that is life-threatening that you have no control over. This is often situations where women are taking these drugs. They're often coerced. They're abandoned. They're left to deal with the whole process of chemical abortion without any physician involvement. And in medicine, when you start a procedure, those complications are your responsibility. So the abortionists that are starting this procedure are basically dumping their complications on those of us who staff the ER. And that's just, it's wrong on so many levels. And that's part of what we wanted the government to understand, that the justices to understand, that this is not only personally ethically wrong, this is medically ethically wrong, to dump your complications on another physician. So that's part of what we're trying to get the government to understand, what it means for the physicians who are involved in taking care of these patients.
Gabriella, with just a little bit more than a minute here, how could the court rule in this case?
Well, as I stated earlier, there are several issues in this case. One of them is standing. Do the doctors and medical associations we represent have standing to sue? And then also the merits question. So there are different avenues that the court could rule on. It could rule on one or both of those, or it could send the case back down to be litigated again. And this is in a preliminary posture, it bears noting, too. So we're up on a preliminary injunction. And so the court could send this case back down to be litigated more fully at the district court.
And how did it fare in the district court the first time?
Well, in both the district court in Texas and in the Fifth Circuit on appeal, both of those courts held that the agency's actions, the FDA's actions, were unlawful.
Gabriella McIntyre is legal counsel for Alliance Defending Freedom. ADF is representing four national medical associations, their members, and four individual doctors against the FDA. You'll find a link to Alliance Defending Freedom at our website, issuesetc.org. Gabriella, thank you very much.
Thank you so much for having me.
Dr. Donna Harrison is a board-certified obstetrician and gynecologist, director of research for the American Association of Pro-Life Obstetricians and Gynecologists, and associate scholar for the Charlotte Lozier Institute. Dr. Harrison, thank you as well.
Thank you very much for having me.
You will find links to the Alliance Defending Freedom and to the American Association of Pro-Life Obstetricians and Gynecologists at our website, issuesetc.org. Click Talk on Demand Archives. When we come back in Hour 2 of Issues, Etc., we're going to be spending some time with Pastor Tom Baker teaching a Sunday school lesson. Jesus is teaching the Samaritan woman at the well in John chapter 4. Then we're going to discuss media coverage of an order by a federal judge for the FBI to hand over a trans school shooter's manifesto. It's been 1 year today since that shooting at Covenant School in Nashville. Terry Mattingly will be our guest.
Defending life from beginning to end. You're listening to Issues, Etc.
You can meet and hear 12-time All-American swimmer Riley Gaines, journalists Mark and Molly Hemingway, Aaron Wren of the American Conservative, Chris Roseborough of Fighting for the Faith, and Pastor Brian Wolfmiller of Has American Christianity Failed at the 2024 Issues, Etc. Making the Case Conference. The premier conference for Christian laity is Friday, July 12th and Saturday, July 13th at Concordia University, Chicago. Learn more and register at issuesetc.org.
Join Lutherans for Life at the For Such a Time as This Lutheran Adoption Conference, April 10th and 11th in Houston, Texas. Enjoy the testimony and talents of Dove Award-winning musician and adoptee Mark Schultz. Discover expert information and exciting opportunities, and experience the fellowship and celebration. The 2024 Lutheran Adoption Conference, April 10th and 11th in Houston. Find out more and register at lutheransforlife.org/conferences.